Blog Talk Radio.
Flavor Patrice Chocolate Banks, and you are tuned into Everybody is a Star live on Tribe, tribefamilychannel.com. Once again, it's Friday, you guys, and once again, Funk 101 is in session. And I promise you, that's with a capital P, that tonight is going to be extra special, okay? So special that I'm not even going to waste time with my world-famous introductions. You know how I do. Me and Steve Harvey, we get down on the introductions. I'm not doing that tonight. I'm just going to jump right in and get this show started. And I'm getting it started with, I told you this show was special, with extra special Mr. Billy Beck. Welcome, Bill. You there?
I'm here, hon. Welcome.
Hey, Billy. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me tonight on Everybody is a Star.
It's my privilege, hon. Mm-hmm.
I have been promoting the heck out of you being on this show tonight, and people are super excited about you being here. So if they don't know who you are, then they need to go somewhere and listen to Everybody is a Star, because they are getting ready to find out exactly who you are and what's up with you, and I just hope we have enough time to get it all in. Now, I must say that I left out Mr. Billy Beck of the Ohio Players. I left that out on purpose because there's so much more to you than just being with the Ohio Players. But then, of course, I cannot, you know, tell people who you are unless I do mention the Ohio Players. So quickly, I'm going to just try to run down a little bit the history of the Ohio Players just a little bit, and help me out if I'm wrong, you know, because I told you I got all my information off the Internet. So if I say something wrong, you jump right in there, okay?
Okay, huh?
Okay. So now the band was formed in Dayton, Ohio in 1959 as the Ohio Untouchables. And initially there was Robert Ward, Marshall Jones, Clarence Satch, and Cornelius Johnson, and Ralph Middlebrooks. Okay, that's how it started out. And they were backing up, they were a backing group for a group out of Detroit called the Falcons, which did the song I Found a Love that Wicked Wilson Pickett sang. I remember that one too. That was a ballad, right? I Found a Love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. For all y'all that don't know about I Found a Love, go to YouTube and check that one out, because Wilson Pickett was singing the heck out of that one. That was like around in 1962. And then in 1963, the Ohio Untouchables broke up. And then they went back to Dayton. And then Sugarfoot was added to the group and became the front man, among others, okay? And then in 1967...
Well, he didn't quite become the front man then. He was a heck of a guitarist, and I think they had a few, like, different lead singers and stuff, but he wasn't the front man yet.
Okay, see? What I tell you. Okay, very good. Well, I had a couple, Bobby Fears and Dutch Robinson, they had them down as singers also.
Right.
Yeah, okay, is that right? Okay, cool. Okay, and then in 1967 is when they first started recording as the Ohio Players.
I think
is that
right? On Capitol Records, I do believe. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm doing pretty good so far. All right.
Yes,
so,
you are.
All right. So the Ohio Players in 1967. Okay. Then around 74 is when you got introduced to the group, right? You came into the group, you and Diamond.
Okay. Yeah, but before then, I think it might have been
then,
around 1970 or 71, Walter Morrison came in the group. Walter,
right.
Also known as Junie.
Junie. And they had the hit. It's so much stuff. They did Pain.
Pain
was
right.
That was a hit like in around, when was that? Around when?
I want to say 71. Somewhere around there.
Yeah, 71. Around 71.
I was still in high
Pain.
School. Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Pain is one of my favorite Ohio Player songs. Love that song. Okay, so 71, that was Pain. Okay, then right after that was the Funky Worm, right?
Right. I think that's about the time that Diamond came into the group. Replacing Greg, the drummer, the original drummer.
Okay.
And
Let me see. Then. Moving on, because I'm trying to hurry up and get to you. So after, they have you and Diamond joining the group at the same time, but he came before you, right?
1 year before I did.
1 year before you did. So you joined the group around 1974, correct?
Actually, that's when Skin Tight came out. Diamond actually started in 72, but I became a member, I think, in 73. I started in 73 and became a member in 74.
Okay, very good. So now we have all that out of the way. So now we're going to go back. Now we're getting ready to concentrate on Mr. Billy Beck. So here's what I want to know. I know you came. You were born on the south side of Youngstown, Ohio, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so, I like for people to shout out their schools and stuff because we have listeners from all over the United States, and I want them to be proud if they happen to have gone to the same schools you went to. So, run us down your schools.
I'll give a shout out to South High School on the south side of Youngstown, Ohio, and a shout out to Youngstown State University, where I went to Dana School of Music.
Okay, cool. Now, what were your first musical influences?
I started playing. I was one of those gifted people. I started playing when I was four.
Okay.
One day after church, I went downstairs. That's when they had the old upright pianos with those round stools that you had to twist up and down.
Right.
And and so I twisted it all the way up to the highest thing so I could finally reach the keyboards, and I played what I heard in church that morning.
So, yeah, so you saying you are one of the gifted ones because, see, that's what I wanted to do. My mother forced me to take piano lessons, but I stopped taking piano lessons because I wanted to do what the people in church were doing. You know, some of my friends in church that could play piano, they could hear a song and then just sit down and play it. And I couldn't do that. I had to have all this stupid music and read all these stupid notes. And I'm like, this is not for me. I want to
see
how to play just like they are doing.
But I was hooked from that moment on because then I started learning what I was playing, learning, what notes they are and how to read music. And then my piano teacher, all the way through high school, junior high and high school, was already a professor at Youngstown State University. And so I was kind of like in an advanced kind of course as far as theory and music and all that stuff.
Okay, but how did you know? So your first musical influences were from the church, out of the church. You apparently went to church all the time with your family, right?
All the time. All day on Sunday.
Right. So how did you know that you wanted to play the piano? I mean, because they played other instruments in church too, didn't they?
Yeah, well, see, I just started playing the piano. I heard what I liked I heard that morning, so I went downstairs in the basement and played it. I taught myself how to play the organ by watching different organists in the area and different ones that would come to town, because Youngstown used to be a town that was very well known for its jazz musicians that would come through.
Okay.
And so I watched what they was doing with their feet, and watched what draw bars they was pulling out, and so I taught myself.
And this was at 4 years old that you taught yourself?
Oh, that was at 11. That was 11.
That was at 11. Okay, I was getting ready to say, now, wait a minute, now, hold it, now, hold it.
No, my legs weren't long enough.
So, okay, after you learned at 4 years old, twisted that stool up, found out that, you know, you could play the piano, how did it develop from there?
I'll tell you, one of my earliest influences was when I heard Cold Sweat by James Brown.
Okay.
That was one of my earliest influences, because I heard that and I said, whoa, this ain't church music, but I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I actually got a chance to see him. He performed at Steinbach Auditorium here in Youngstown. And I was hooked then.
Okay, so through school, were you in like local groups in Youngstown?
Oh yeah.
Or?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh my God, yes.
How many of them?
Let's see. Yeah, there was the Ronnie Lee Combo, the Ronnie Lee Thing, Onyx Experience, the Ebony's. Oh, my God. It goes on and on. Generation Gap.
Oh, that's cute. I like that. So in other words, there were many, many of them. So you spent, when did you start, we're going to call it secular, when did you start getting into secular music?
When I was 14.
When you were 14, okay. So did your school work, suffer? I mean, were you still...
I was keeping my grade. My mother is still alive. God bless her. She's 90 years old. I'm an only child, and she would tell you I've never caused her not one single problem. I was always take out the trash, do my chores, getting straight A's and stuff like that, and still finding time to practice. Okay.
Yay! SeaWorld, there are some musicians who did grow up not incorrigible, didn't drop out of school and stuff. So you were getting A's, and then you were playing on the weekends, obviously.
Right. And playing in church.
And playing in church. Let us not leave out
church.
Now,
no, we ain't going to leave out church.
Not leave out church. So what about singing? When did you start singing?
I didn't really start singing until, I got with one group. Who was that? Onyx Experience, O-N-Y-X Experience. I did a Donny Hathaway tune. What was it called? Jealous Guy.
Okay.
The cover of a Beatles tune. And that was the first time I actually tried to sing and knew that I could hit some of those notes. As far as singing falsetto, I never even did that until I got with the Ohio Players in the studio. I never knew I had a high voice.
So, Billy, wait a minute. You mean to tell me that you, all those years in church, you never even tried to sing? You never wanted to be? You didn't?
I just wanted to play.
Your voice is so beautiful. I just can't believe that you didn't open your mouth and weren't singing when you were playing. So you were in this group Onyx, you said, right?
Onyx Experience, uh-huh.
Experience, and that's where you first started singing.
That's where, because we even did for the Ohio Players. See, I was always an Ohio Players fan first.
Right.
Okay, everything they put out, I bought. Okay, let me first say that. So I knew all their stuff. I taught myself everything. They would come out with an album, and I would sit down and just learn the whole album.
Right. Right, because they were from Ohio.
Kind of
yeah. Right.
And you know, that I was proud of them because they were from Ohio. I still am.
Absolutely. And a little old city town, Dayton, Ohio at that. Well, some of them, I don't know about all of them, but I know some of them were from Dayton, Ohio. So, yeah. So you knew, so you were a huge Ohio Players fan before you got with them. Okay, we're not going to, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. So now, want to keep this flow going. Okay, so after you were playing all these in all these local groups and stuff and, like, you know, honing your craft and getting ready because you were in a state of preparation, whether you knew it or not, for what
and
was
I, and I really didn't know it. I really didn't know it, but I just know
right.
I loved what I did, okay?
Right. And were you getting any money for it? All these little local
think,
groups, all these little local
yeah,
groups.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think. I think I was making maybe $40 a gig.
Okay.
And was proud. brought that money home and gave it straight to my mama.
I know that's right. I know that's right. Now, tell us some of the, I know it was a long time ago, but can you give us some of the names of some of the clubs and little places that you played locally around town?
There was a place called the Elks in Youngstown, which I still occasionally play at when I'm not on the road or in the studio with the Ohio Players. There used to be this place called the Hublon Lounge in Akron, Davis Nightclub, which was out in, like, Hubbard, Ohio. And a lot of those places are torn down or, you know,
not
used anymore.
Right.
And then there was the Don Dance at Lake Villa.
Okay. So we want to make sure that we mention them because, you know, that's a huge part of history, you know what I'm saying, out of Ohio. So we want to make sure we mention those places. So, okay. So now, how did you hook up or get involved with the Ohio Players? How did that happen?
Usually the best local groups in the area were the ones who would open up for the famous groups, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that the two times, I say between 71 and 72 that they came to Youngstown. One was at the Ritz Club on the east side of Youngstown, and the other one was Davis's nightclub out on Hubbard. Those two particular times, I happened to be in two different bands, but I was the same guy that the players saw each time. The two totally different bands.
Right, right.
So it was like, you know, I guess I was the best keyboard player in the area. So that's, you know,
that's so sweet of you to be humble like that. I really appreciate that. That's good. So now you were the best. Let's put that out there right now. So they saw you. You opened up for them in these different groups, and then what?
The next thing I heard was, I just now remembered the old drummer's name, Greg Webster, the Diamond replaced, because they needed someone who could sing as well as play. Okay, because the first time they played at Davis's, Greg Webster was still the drummer. That was with the Onyx Experience. The second time they played was at the Ritz Club, on the east side of Youngstown, and that's where I first met Diamond.
Okay.
And anyway, so next thing I heard, one of my friends called me and told me, man, you hear that Junie quit? I said, what? So next thing I knew, they was calling my mama's house.
So, but where do you think they got your mama's phone number from?
That from one of my friends. They called who one of my friends who, you know, they would stay up with stuff like that. At the time, I was a little bit busy because by that time I already had two kids. I worked at the steel mill, played at church, and was going to YSU.
Wow.
College. Yeah.
Okay. What were you taking in college,
kid,
by the way?
I went to Dana School of Music.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right. So now you got this phone call from the Ohio Players. First, before we talk about this phone call, so you were a big fan of the Ohio Players. So now what did you think about Junie? I mean, especially because you more or less replaced him.
I thought he was awesome. I thought he was awesome.
Me too. Awesome. I thought he was awesome. He had a style, you know, that I had never heard before, all his own. I'm talking about his singing style now, all
mm-hmm.
his own. And just,
and his playing,
you know,
style as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was too busy listening. I'm a singer, so I was busy listening
to right.
his. Yeah, I was busy listening to his voice. But so you admired him. You were a big fan of his also.
Yeah.
So now when you get this call saying that Junie quit and they were looking for somebody, then what? How did that feel?
Well, the first thing, I thought it was a joke, okay? And then Satch called back. Satch kept calling back. He was the leader.
Satch was the leader, okay.
Mm-hmm. And he kept calling back to my mom. So cause he said, man, look, I'll send you an airplane ticket. I said, oh, no, you won't. I had never flown before.
What you tell him? Oh, no, you won't. Okay, where was he trying to send you a ticket to?
To Youngstown Regional Airport to fly to Dayton.
To Dayton, okay.
And so the next time he kept calling, he kept talking to my mom, Satch did, and mom was saying, well, my boy gonna be all right and so forth, and so you know how moms do.
Right.
Okay. And so to me about it, and I said, well, I can't do nothing. I said, I'll try just during the weekend, because they said they had some gigs for like a Saturday or Sunday or whatever. Okay, and I said, okay, I'll do it for a weekend. And I said, long as you guys pay me what money I'm going to be missing from church which was $100.
Okay. I heard that.
As
I get my church money.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I had two kids.
Right.
So then I got down there, had my friends drive me down and gave them gas money and got to Sasha's house about in time enough for the bus to pull up. And we did the gigs. First, those gigs I did without any rehearsal.
No rehearsal whatsoever. But that was all right because you already knew all the stuff.
I knew their stuff, right.
So, wait a minute. Let me say this first before I forget. Now, I think it is so awesome that you had a mother that usually that's not the case. The parents are saying, no, you don't really need to be doing that music stuff. Go to school, stay in school, blah, blah, blah. But your mother, she sounded like she talked you into going to check the Ohio Players out. She was, like, extremely supportive.
She was always supportive of everything I've done when it comes to music because I was a child who never gave her any problems.
Right.
So when it seemed like that was something I wanted to do, I guess she figured something could be me just going to the steel mills.
Right. And Satch must have been doing a whole lot of talking because he convinced her.
Yes.
He convinced her.
You got that right, sis.
And next thing you knew, you were in Dayton. Okay, so now you're in Dayton. So now you got to do, how did it feel when you had to do this first gig with them? No rehearsals. Where were you? Where was the venue? Tell me all about it.
Okay, I think that might have been Louisville, Kentucky. I know we opened up for Al Green, who was real big at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I had played in a Coliseum. I had never played in a venue. And
right.
I was fine, just looking ahead. But then I happened to look up and seen all these other levels. And so I said, well, look to your left.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Look to your right. Same thing. And then some said, look behind you. I froze.
You mean you literally froze?
I literally froze until Seth came over right in front of me and said, play. So and so and so.
He cussed a little bit. Snapped you out of it.
That snapped me out of it.
And then you were on a roll after that, huh? But shoot, I can imagine it was thousands of people in that venue, right?
Oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah, and like you say,
it was a Coliseum, so there were people all the way around you.
All the way around,
360, yeah.
Right, and when the lights are low or down or out almost, all you can see is just the people right in front of you. But as soon as some kind of light comes on and you can see that you are totally surrounded, well, yeah, that's enough to make somebody freeze that has never been in that situation before. But Satch, boy, one thing about Satch, he knew how to talk, didn't he?
Yeah. Yes, he did. Yes, he did, honey.
Okay,
yes,
so here's what we're going to do now. We're going to play, and I just want to say to the listeners that I asked Billy, I said, okay, Billy, like I asked all my guests, give me some of your favorite Ohio player songs, you know, so that I can play on the program. And he couldn't even give me any. He said, I said, okay, never mind, forget it. I will go ahead on and choose some of the ones I like the best. So we're going to start with Pain, because that's one of my favorites, like I said, and we're going to start right there with Pain. You ready?
I'm ready, honey.
Here we go.
You know where I'm at.
That's what I'm talking about. That boy hollered like, he hollered like Sly.
Yeah, he sure did.
Make me fool around and want to throw one of them out, but I'll wait, though. Y'all ain't ready. So, okay. So now, okay, here we are. This is your first gig. You froze. Seth had to come and wake you up right quick. You woke up. You got through that gig. So now tell us what it was like to, because here you came from working a 9-to-5, a hard 9-to-5, two kids, church, background totally opposite of what you are now thrown into. So where did it go from there, and what did it feel like?
It was hard work. It was hard work because I didn't want to sing.
Mm-hmm.
That was Satch and I had about very many arguments about that. I said, you guys hired me to play piano. He said, no, you got to sing too.
Mm-hmm.
So playing the diverse rhythms, okay, that Jimmy had to play and to sing, I had to really teach myself how to do that, how to coordinate all that. But once I got it down, it was really easy.
Okay, so that's the technical part about it. What of it? What about being on the road, the pace? You know, tell us about
the
lifestyle.
I can tell you this. First of all, I came to Dayton, that one weekend, I never went back. I never went back home. Okay, so I basically was staying. Stayed with Satch for a while. I stayed with Marshall Jones for a while. Sugar had an apartment next door to him that became available, and I wound up staying there. But Diamond was, in fact, the first person who actually took me around, you know, took me to his house and you know, kind of showed me around. And I'll never forget him for that. And him and I are still close to this day like that because all my brothers, I'm close with all of them. Sugar, hanging out with him, that was a deep brother.
Okay.
God bless his soul.
And you know what? You know what? Deep is a good word for it because I was around you guys. Grand Central Station went on tour with the Ohio Players. We opened up for you guys. And
right.
I was around you guys for a few months. And deep is a good word for him. What, like, exactly? Give us a little bit of insight on each of those brothers. You know what I'm saying? Because they were part of, you became a part of their family. So just briefly, you know, just from your point of view, when you say deep, when you refer to
Sugar,
what do you mean?
He was a very well-read and learned brother. And we would talk about music all the time, and we would just experiment putting different scales against chords and stuff that weren't supposed to be, you know, just trying different stuff.
Right.
There's one song, I think it's on the Fire album called What the Hell. That whole song was written in the diminished mode, which is something was unheard of.
Right. And like I said, I know a little something about that because I was forced to take piano lessons. So I know a little
right.
something about that. Okay. So,
mm-hmm.
so you guys related to each other like from a very intellectual aspect as far as the music goes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Okay. So now what about Satch? He was like the quote-unquote, I guess, leader of the group, right?
Yeah, he was a leader and also kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? For lack of a better word right now, I'll say he was kind of like the spark, okay? The spark that would start the minds to think, or he just come up with one phrase, and then it was a challenge for us to try and make that phrase to turn it into fit into the music. Because, see, we wouldn't write the words and melody first. We would write the music first and then write the words and the melody,
mm-hmm.
which is total opposite to the way that it was done during those days.
Okay. So he was like a creative force.
Yeah. And Diamond as well. Diamond is a heck of a lyricist, whether anybody knew it or not. I know personally because I've seen him do it. There's another song on the Fire album called Together that I wrote all the music to and did the bass line. And Diamond heard me playing, and, you know, he's always, you know, been wanted to pitch in and try to make things work. And mm-hmm. I had a melody somewhat, but he came up with those lyrics. So, I mean, and it's always been that way.
Okay.
He's, and talking about Marshall would come up with the...
Now, he was a bass player, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
Marshall would come up with... Oh, wait a minute. Before I get to Marshall, moving back to Diamond, okay, I'm not going to even comment on his style of drumming because...
Oh, you know what? He
was
and still
awesome. Is unique.
He was awesome. He was awesome. I used to watch him play, you know, because my
uh-huh.
whole thing was bass and drums. So I used to watch him play. It was like he would be a blur sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then be right back and be right back on beat.
Okay.
I mean, how do we start a ballad off with a drum solo?
Okay.
Talk about want to be free.
shoot.
Right.
That's right. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. That he was awesome. Still is awesome. Okay.
Yes, he is. And Marshall, he had a very very unique style of playing bass. Kind of against the grain style of playing bass. And let's see, who else is left?
Talking about Sugarfoot.
Right. Oh my goodness, what can I say? I mean, playing that double neck guitar and playing stuff that he would play on the guitar, and he used to do these vocal scats that were amazing. I mean,
yes.
It would sound make the guitar sound like it was talking.
Right, absolutely. That's right. That's right.
And
as far as I'm concerned, everybody after him, there have been many who have imitated but never duplicated. You know what I'm
there
saying?
You go.
He was the first.
Yeah.
He was the first.
Yes, he was.
I'm talking about vocally. He was the first mm-hmm. to have that sound, you know, and that was a natural sound because he hadn't heard it before, so he was just
right.
being himself. But everybody
right.
after him was trying to sound like him. So, you know, innovator. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Pioneer.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So, well, you know, there's one more person I'm going to ask you about, and that's Marvin Pierce.
Uh-huh. Merv, we called him.
Merv.
Uh-huh. He could read music, some sheet music, like spontaneously. You put him in front of him, boom. You know, you could just read it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a gift for someone to put down some music if you know they've never seen it and just boom, read it.
Well, you have to study
and
that.
Yes, he did, and I'm not
mm-hmm.
exactly sure where he studied that, but I know he did. I think he went to Kentucky State. I'm almost sure because Diamond went to Kentucky State too.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the first person I saw play a valve trombone.
Okay.
At that time, everyone was, you know, using regular slide trombones.
Got it.
Okay. Pee Wee.
Now, since you said that, now I know the difference. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Pee Wee, and the notes he could hit on that trumpet were unbelievable sometimes. Really unbelievable. And to be the smart one of the shorter fellas in the group, he would come up with this voice. It was as big as all outdoors. And he had a sense of humor would keep the group in stitches.
And you would always laugh. That's one thing I remember about you. You were always laughing. Okay, so you have described basically, you know, this family of brothers that you were with. So now tell me what that pace was like going from Youngstown to being in the Ohio Players and being on the road, and, you know, what was that like?
It was a little tedious because we back during those days, before Skin Tight came out, we had to do, I think, something like, sometimes we would do like four shows in the same night at the same club. And, you know, that was a little rough.
Right.
That was a little rough.
Yes,
that's all we were doing. And every now and then we might get some bigger venues, and, you know, when we did the college circuit. But most of them were clubs. And then when Skin Tight, in preparing to do Skin Tight, we actually would play at this club in Buffalo. I can't remember the name of it. We played at night.
Wasn't it Peppermint something?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's been a long time ago. But I know we would play there in the night, okay, stay up, catch the early morning flight to Chicago, be in the studio all day, okay, get back on the plane, and get back in time to do another show. And that's how we recorded Skin Tight.
The thing about it is people, when they see you up there, now you said you played four shows a night, right, at this club.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people, I'm sure that each set had a completely different crowd. So now you are grinding. This is a grind that you are on. But those crowds, they didn't care about that. They came to see the Ohio Players, and you guys had to be funking it up every single time. Didn't matter
how tired
you were, any of that.
Right.
And
keep
so
the
many
energy
times,
up and all that, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And because you were actually playing instruments, you know, back in those days, playing.
That's right.
And working. And saying, not pushing buttons and stuff. So, it's a double-edged sword because, you know, not only it was great doing that because that was your passion and that's what you wanted to do, but it was hard work. People see you up on stage and they think everything, you just partying and having fun and got all this money and all that. But no, it is not always like that. It is a lot of hard work.
It's a lot of hard work.
Oh, my
discipline.
God.
Mm-hmm. A lot
Absolutely.
Of hard work and discipline. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
But you were talking about what it became after then. After Skin Tight came out, the pace picked up. I mean, almost like, to me, a little homeboy from Youngstown, Ohio, it was like almost at light speed. We were moving so fast, you know, and flying here and flying there and going overseas and still our life consisted of basically working and being in the studio most of the time.
So you got over your fear of flying real. You had to get over that quick, didn't
you? Because Sash told me like that. I said, man, I ain't flying. He said, well, then you won't be in the group. I said, well, I guess I'm flying.
Because you sure can't get your friends to drive you to Europe, can you?
No, honey.
You couldn't do that. So now you are a very prolific songwriter. And after you joined the group, that's when some of their biggest hits were written. So the question is, how many of those hits did you help write?
How about all of them?
How about all of them? I heard that.
Yeah.
So, and this is what I already know. So the next question is, did you get compensated for that?
Yes, of course. I sure did, and we all did. First time I got a check in the mail talking about royalty, I was like, what's that?
Okay.
And I opened it up and seen them. I said, oh, thank you, Jesus.
Well, now, that's good news. I'm glad to hear that because so many times the opposite is true. You know, people are writing all these hit songs and never see a penny because as soon
right.
as money starts
I mean,
coming
that,
into
there,
play.
There's another side of the coin to that because, you know, we kind of got ripped sometimes. We were doing an audition for
Don't tell that story yet.
Okay.
No, not yet.
Not yet.
So,
okay.
Love Roller Coaster, that's one of the songs. Did you write the music to that song?
Sugarfoot came up with the chord pattern.
Okay.
And I had to find a way to fit a keyboard in there because of that rhythm. And so I had to be very careful about to be there and not get in the way. And
okay.
a lot of keyboard players tell me today, like, only Billy Beckham play that pattern. Well, because I had no choice, I had to get in where I fit in.
Right. And also about this Love Roller Coaster song. Now, there's this myth, there's this story going on that's been going on for years, I've discovered, about the scream that you apparently do, like in the beginning. Is it in the beginning of Love Roller Coaster?
It's in the middle, in the breakdown.
In the middle of the breakdown, okay. So now there's this myth going on that a woman actually was murdered in the studio while you guys were recording this, and that scream is her screaming as she is getting murdered. I don't know how that started, but that's one of the craziest things I have ever heard. So I'm hoping that we are going to put an end to all that foolishness tonight as we listen to and know that this is you screaming, okay, on Love Roller Coaster, on the breakdown in the middle. It's Billy Beck. Nobody's getting murdered, okay, on Love Roller Coaster. Here we go.
Say what? Roller coaster.
It did sound like somebody was being seriously, you know, hurt. But you, dude, I bet you couldn't do that scream now. We'll hold on, though. We'll hold on that scream.
Listen, okay. The gunshot noise was an ARP 2600, which at that time was about as big as maybe a dresser in your bedroom.
Okay.
You had to use patch cores and use noise, white noise in envelopes to make your and filters to make your own sounds.
Wow, working it out, doing whatever it took, right?
That's right.
Because guess what? Didn't have any buttons, huh?
No buttons.
Didn't have any dials.
He had to make it do what it was going
to
do.
Okay, he had to make it do, and that made it right. That made it right. Okay, so I just want to briefly just run down how you and I met, because we really are. I really do know you. I get so sick and tired of people introducing people saying, this is my longtime friend, and blah, blah, blah. They don't even know each other. But the fact of the matter is that Graham Central Station did go on tour with Ohio Players, and that was one of the most fun tours that I had ever been on. We did, in New York, we did Radio City Music Hall for about by a week. And, you know, I can't even tell how much fun
those
I had on that. But
that was a good memories, right? Good memories.
Absolutely. Do you have a memory that stands out while on the road with us? Well, we were on the road with you,
because
we were opening up for
very
you.
The very first time. Because you did open up for us. But the very first time that I heard you guys, heard Grand Central Station, we came out on the West Coast, okay? It might have been Oakland or somewhere around there. We played somewhere around there. And I think you guys had just finished your very first album, and because it hadn't even, like, really started playing big on the radio, but when it hit hard. And I was like, when I seen y'all do the show, I was like, whoa, they going to be around.
Okay.
Y'all was funky, okay?
Yeah,
for
you
real.
Were. I agree. We were. And when I found out that, because I was a big fan of the Ohio Players, and when I found out that we were going on the road with you guys, it was like, oh, man, is this going to be some fun. So, like I said, that was one of the most fun tours that I had while being in Grand Central Station. Okay, so back to you. Now, the Ohio Players are getting bigger and bigger and more famous and making more and more money. What was that like?
Unreal. It was really unreal. truly unreal. I mean, I was, do you remember, I think it was my 21st birthday, and we had just done the Hula Bowl or something in Honolulu, and me and Marvin decided to fly back to L.A. to catch the red eye, because I wanted to be in L.A. on my birthday. And I think you picked us up from the airport.
I probably picked you up. But you know that was a long time ago. But you are you know, like, shaking some things up. And I believe that I do remember picking you guys up at the airport. Because let me just say now that Marvin and I, we have history.
That's right.
Not only do we have history, we have a daughter.
Living history.
And we also have grandkids. So let me just get that out the way. So, okay, I came and picked you guys up, and then what?
Oh man, I had a wonderful birthday. Wonderful
What'd
birthday.
Do? What'd you do, Billy? What'd you do?
Oh,
you remember?
My God, no. I remember somebody cooked. Somebody cooked food. Somebody made a cake. Oh, my goodness. There were drinks. And I was 21 years old, came off of that tour. That's when I bought my first house. And at 21 years old, $70,000 house.
Okay. And let me say this, too. When you know, during that experience with you guys, I was in Ohio for a minute and hanging with Marvin, and I saw, like, I couldn't believe what I saw. The money, so you guys were getting money because it was obvious you were getting money because, number one, somebody in the group had every Italian car. Like, one had a Lamborghini, one had a Ferrari, one had a Maserati. Y'all had all the cars that ended in E. Y'all had every single one of them. I remember one time I came to the airport in L.A. Maybe this was the time you were talking about to pick you up and Marvin up. Maybe, I don't know. But I know it was in the summertime. And I know that Satch had on a mink coat in L.A. in the summertime. Okay? Okay. And so you guys, it was obvious that you had the money. Now, as far as me being in Grand Central Station goes, we didn't have any money at that point. You know, you guys were, you know, let me say this. Larry had the money. Grand Central Station didn't. But that's another story. So to be able to, like, see in front of my eyes what you guys were doing with all this money. Everybody had big houses. You know, like I said, all the luxury cars, the Mercedes, that was just a, you know, that was like your everyday car right
there. Everyday car.
Yeah, you know, that was like take the kids to school cars. But
and that was back in like 1974.
Yeah, it was. That was back in 1974. Yes, absolutely. And so you guys were rolling and balling. And I was like, you know, this is what I want to do, you know, when I grow up, because Grand Central Station hadn't quite made it to that level yet. But it was a lot of fun just watching you guys do it. And plus, you know, not only that, you know, there was a darker side to that, too, because, as we all know, everybody was into drugs. Everybody was into drugs. And some were into drugs deeper than others. So not only was a lot of money being spent on, like, the luxuries of life, but a whole lot of money was being wasted on drugs, you know. And but, you know, that's, yeah, but we figured that, you know, that's all a part of our lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? That came with it. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll really was not just, was not just
sex,
a cliche, but it was
sex, drugs,
a way of life.
Sex, drugs, funk, and rock and roll.
Hey, sex, drugs, and funk and roll. It was a way
right,
of life.
Funk and
it's
roll,
just the way it was. Yeah, funk and roll.
Right.
Everybody was doing it. So now, tell me about, like, when you saw the end of the road coming for the Ohio Players. What was going on?
I know a lot of people have seen the unsung that they did on us, and I won't keep redigging that dead body up. I'll just say some of us were in a lot deeper than drugs, like you were saying, than others. And after a few busts went down, then the IRS came in. Because the bust,
right.
The IRS came in and smacked us with a, oh, my goodness, I don't even know how many million dollars lawsuit, you know. And still, to some degree, they still bother us to this day, to some degree.
Okay.
Not as badly as then. So, I mean, you live and you learn, you know?
Right.
You live and you learn, okay? And then you move forward, and you keep pressing toward, you know, try to do much better and press for a higher mark. On that note, let me get my plug in real quick. The Ohio Players are currently in the studio working on new music. To be the first new music we've done in quite a few years.
Okay, that's exciting. We haven't gotten to that yet. I know that you guys are doing some things, and that's wonderful. You know, it's all about keeping that legacy alive, Billy, because, you know,
that's right.
Somebody has to do it. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I'm
that's
doing
right.
this show. is for the historical value of it. You know, I need to be able to present the truth school to all of those who were there, who were your fans, who were our fans, you know, them, and for the younger generation that comes along, they want to be a part of the funk, you know what I'm saying? They're calling themselves funk master and funkologist and funk this and funk that and have no idea what funk is all about. So this is part of the reason why I do what I do, and the fact that you are, because the Ohio Players, they really never stopped. They continued to play. Like, there were a couple of bands, Ohio bands out there for a minute. So continuing to keep that legacy going is what really counts. That's all that really
right.
counts. You know, until
right.
the wheels fall
and,
off, you know?
Right, that's right. And to all those younger folks who want to do this, okay, I just got to remind you, I mean, everybody is slowly returning back to live music. So learn your craft.
And that's what I was going to ask you, you know, what advice you would give. But before we do that, I want you to tell that story that you were getting ready to tell.
Oh,
but I
said, okay.
Wait, yeah.
Yeah, okay. We were auditioning to do the soundtrack for the movie The Greatest. The very first one was Muhammad Ali. And the one that George Benson sang that also... Well, anyway, the song, I was stalling. Our equipment was late getting from the airport. And
the Ohio Players were commissioned to do the music for the, was it a documentary or a movie called The Greatest?
Yeah, I think it was a movie. It wasn't really a documentary. Okay, and we were auditioning to do the soundtrack, okay? And so our equipment was late getting there. The only thing in the studio, okay, we waited for a while, and it seemed like the equipment would never, ever get there. So Satch came out of the booth and said, man, this dude's getting ready to, you know, tell us to go about our business. Said, play something, but just keep him interested. So I just started playing a little something off the top of my head. And before I knew anything, they were setting up recording mics over the piano. Everybody else was issued into the control room. And that song wound up becoming The Greatest Love of All, which I never got.
The Greatest Love of All.
Never. Yeah.
So okay. I'm
I think I got a, I got a 1% royalty.
Wow. So now here, let me just recreate this situation if I can. Satch asked you to just play something because he was trying to make sure that you guys didn't lose that gig, right? He was trying to make sure that
stall for time.
Did not
right.
lose. So you were stalling for time. So now here you are just doodling around on the piano. Next thing you know, they're setting up all these microphones and all this equipment and stuff, and then they start recording you as you are doodling on the piano. So now when they started setting up all this equipment, what were you thinking? What was going through your mind when you saw
what was going it? What was going through my mind is I know my boys got my back, you know.
Okay.
Satch, however he handled it, I think it was one of those situations where he had Satch's back.
Okay.
And
that's real. I appreciate you for keeping it real. That's real. Okay. So now you finished doodling or whatever.
Here's the thing. When I heard it on the radio about maybe a month later, I looked at Satch. I said, man, that's that song.
Right.
He just looked at me and shrugged his shoulders. Yeah.
I know you wanted to knock him out.
You have no idea.
Oh, but I bet you I do. So let me ask you this. So you are playing the music. You are playing the chords. So who wrote the lyrics?
oh my God. The producer hired some writers out in California to do it. I know the producer was Mike Masser, I believe. And all the details about that, I mean, I've done some discovery. I've made some
right.
phone calls and whatever. So, you know, that is what it is.
I was just wondering
right
if you
now.
Knew who wrote the lyrics. So at the end of the day, you said you got 1%?
1%. And I only got 1%. It one time.
Only
one time. Yep.
The greatest love of all. And that's one of the greatest songs of all, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest songs of all, a beautiful song. So what'd you learn from that?
The way I played it, the melody was in what I was playing, along with the chord progressions.
The melody was there too. Not just the chords, yeah. but the melody.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
And Satch just shrugged his shoulders.
Yeah, I guess he had made a side deal. You know.
Well, let me just say this. That no matter how it happened, how it went down, that song is timeless, and if they ever have like a time capsule where they send stuff, you have stuff, what are they doing, time capsules? Bury stuff for people, aliens to come from outer space and get it 1,000 years later? That's going to be
mm-hmm.
one of the songs that's going to be in there, because that was truly an anointed song, and that's why I wanted to bring that story out, because I know people don't know that, and that is so important to me, that contribution to music, just music, period. You know what I'm saying? Music universally.
Yeah.
That contribution that you made will never be forgotten, not ever. So, y'all, if you didn't know, now you know. That's all.
And another piece of advice on that, always know your music business, have your copyright forms with you.
Right. You said have them with you, huh?
With you.
But you know what? The one thing about it, though, Billy, is, you know, God is good. God is a good guy. So,
yes,
you know, no matter what, you have been taken care of, because I know you have many trials and tribulations and storms, but, baby, you have made it to the other side, and that is all that matters. And so what are the Ohio players doing now? I know that Shimfoot had an Ohio players for a minute, and he passed. So what's going on with you guys now?
Well, we're still touring. Our live show is still very good, very tight. And we're in the studio now. I think one of our tunes is already on what medium is it on? I can't think of it right now. But anyways, let me mention the fact that if you want any information about what we're doing now, you can go to loveroller.com,
loveroller coaster.com,
and the Ohio players were on Facebook.
We have pictures
of us in the studio and us on tour, and we're currently working on a CD.
It'll
be finished very shortly, and hopefully it'll be released by maybe the beginning of next year or spring of next year.
So that website is loverollercoaster.com. Now, who are the in the band? The original members, you and Diamond?
Myself, Diamond, Kuumba, Robert Jones Kuumba, and Clarence Chet Willis. We're the four originals.
There are four of you guys. Now, let me say this, too, about the Ohio players. Now, when I heard, I was a big Ohio player fan, and when I heard, let me just, off the top of my head, I want to be free is what comes to mind right now. But I'm like, all of that falsetto that all of you guys are singing, I'm like, these people, these men, they don't need any women. They are hitting these notes high up in the sky. They going to prove that they don't need a female. So that was you and who else up there hitting all that beautiful
harmony? Me and Diamond. Me and Diamond.
That was you and Diamond hitting all that beautiful harmony, those high notes. And you didn't even want to sing. And you said you did not even know that you could sing falsetto until you got in the Ohio Players.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So how did you find out you could hit a note that high?
I don't know. We were in the studio. This happened, I think, during Skin Tight. And we were answering after Sugarfoot put down a verse. We needed to answer his Skin Tight.
Skin Tight?
Then we had to.
Right.
So I said, no, I don't think we want to answer nothing like Skin Tight. You know, be down here, sound like Skin Tight.
Right.
So let's take it out, you know. And they actually thought that we had women on the singing the
verse. Right.
And it was us.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. But it was you. So it's not easy to sing falsetto. So how did you even know that your voice would even go that high? You just tried it and said, oh, okay, I can do this.
Oh, okay, right, basically.
And Diamond, too? And Diamond, too? Had he been singing before?
Yeah, he had been singing before, but not that high.
But not that high. So both of you guys discovered at the same time that you could sing that high.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was on, because you guys were singing like that, because I thought it was women. I could not believe that these men were singing this high. So, listen, we have a caller. Do you want to take a call?
Sure.
Okay, we have a caller, area code 757. I don't know how long they've been holding on. Hopefully they're still there. 757, are you there? Hello? I think they're coming.
Okay. Hello?
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 Is this caller from area code 757?
Yes.
Okay, good. So who are we speaking to?
This is Ray.
Oh, hi, Ray.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. So what questions or comments do you have tonight for Mr. Bay?
I am just enjoying the program, and I really did not know your vocal exploits like that, and the fact that you did not know that you had no idea that you could sing that like that is just, it's just phenomenal. It's just unbelievable. But the Ohio Players was one of the groups that I followed back in the day between Graham Central Station, Sly and the Family Stone, and then it was the Ohio Players. And it's just a great history lesson, and I've been glued, listening to every word. I'm enjoying it.
Well, thank you very much, Ray. Now, do you have a call? Great.
Not really. I'm just, it's late on the East Coast.
It's a little late. It's a little late. Okay. All right.
It's a little late.
Well, thank you so much, my brother. And you know I appreciate you calling in, and thank you very much.
All right.
Is Billy awesome? He's awesome, isn't he?
He is. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, so we're going to get on with it. And so let me see. I'm at a loss. Let me see here. I got two songs I can play. Now, Fop was one of my all-time favorites. Can you give us a little tidbit on Fop? Who thought, was that a word you guys thought of? Because I'm going to play
it's
that
word,
next.
It's a word we made up because back then, as you do well remember, we couldn't curse on record.
Right.
We could not use profanity.
Right.
So we were talking about a particular act of lovemaking, but we could not use the particular word that started with F, so we made up our own word. But it still
made
had
up
four,
own word.
That still had four letters, which meant the same thing.
And it's the funkiest word. I don't know who made that word up, but I like it. And so here we go. We're going to play. We're going to play Foppin. Got the whole word. Okay. I'm about to mess up the words. Here we go, BJ. Fop. You can pop Action United, folks. That was you and Sugar doing the lead. And doing the
right.
lead. And that's you
Sugar
all up
played
in the
myself.
Top with me in the
yeah, that's me.
That's you, Billy Jack. That is you. Okay. Okay. So, I guess it's time. I'm having way too much fun, but it's time for us to wrap it up, unfortunately. So, listen, here's what I want you to do. Do you have any advice? You gave a little bit of it earlier to, you know, any artists that are out here trying to make it today. What would you say to them?
I'd say study your craft. Always remember that keep it fun, because when it starts becoming fun and too much work, then you're working too hard. Okay? Keep it fun. Study your craft. Know your music business enough so that you don't get caught with your pants down. And I encourage you all, as I said, live music is coming back. There's nothing wrong with recording on computers or anything like that. Get live. Keep it funky, okay?
Okay, because you know what? Machines don't have heartbeats, you know what I'm saying? That funk comes from the heartbeat. So that's your
that's
advice,
right.
which is the advice of most of my guests on the show. They tell, you know, they say the same thing you say, you know, keep it real. You got to keep it real. How far is music going to go if it's only being made on machines and, you know what I'm saying, with buttons and dials and stuff? How far can music go? You know, well, but, you know, on the other side of that, the one good thing about it is this. If nobody ever plays another note that is funky ever again for all times, we know that between the Ohio Players, Grand Central Station, Sly the Family Stone, George, we know that all you got to do is just go back and listen. So it's like, you know, funk has its own legacy. And
it's
going to be around, you know, for all times. And you're keeping it alive, you know, until the wheels fall off. And so that's all that matters, that, you know, you got some place that you can go back and listen to, which is what many of them do. That's how they make their songs that they're making today, by sampling. But that's another whole story right
that's
there.
That's another whole show.
Another whole show. So you got any shout-outs?
Just a shout out to all Ohio Players fans and lovers of funk music. Okay, keep on believing in the funk.
All right,
the funk ain't never dying.
No, it's not. Especially when you can go back and listen. Like I said, it ain't going nowhere. Well, I just want to say that I have had so much fun tonight, and for all things chocolate, you can go to PatriceChocolateBanks.com and check me out. And if you didn't know, there's a Funkolution going on Facebook. I have a Funkolution page with my partner in crime, Stozo, and what we are trying to do with the Funkolution is we are trying to reposition the funk and put it back where it belongs in music history, because it is underrated. It is not given the acclaim that it should be given. So it is, you know, I'm on a mission to keep that funk alive and put it back up there where it belongs. Want to thank my family, my husband, my Destiny, my daughter, Unique, Marvin's daughter. I want to say thank you to Team Chocolate, Ray, Zelda, Billy. I want to say thank you to BBJ, who is the owner of Tribe Family Channel. She keeps everything running smooth. And I want to say God bless you. And until next week, may the fun be with you. And so what we're going to do is on our way out. Oh, and I want to say shout out to Diamond, who is Billy's brother in funk. I believe he's
right.
Still listening. If he's not, he called in earlier and we spoke. And, you know, just on drums, I mean, all I can say is if you want to learn how to play the drums, he's one of the put any Ohio Player records on. They don't have records no more, huh? Whatever, go to YouTube, whatever you do, and check him out. Okay, that's where you can start learning right there. So, hi, Diamond. Thank you for listening. And you need to come on and do this interview with me. Okay? And we are going to, and Billy, you are so sweet. And I know you had a million other things because you could have been doing because you are busy right now in the studio, like you said. And I so appreciate you, and I thank you so much. And continue to do your thing until the wheels fall off, okay?
I sure will, sis.
Okay, and God bless you, and may the Father be with you and yours, and we are going to go out. We got to go out on fire. We got to go. We might as well just go out burning it up. How does that sound to you?
Sound pretty good to me.
That sound good to you? Well, here we go. Fire. Da-da-da. You wrote that too, didn't you?
Yeah. Especially the last part.
Okay, let it be known. Let it be known.
Be no stopping. Do.